And Colin, it was a scary weekend. That's the story, no question about it. In F1, and the fact that Romain Grosjean survived that horrific opening lap crash was really kind of amazing. I've seen him; he's talking on video. Obviously, his hands are still bandaged, and looks like it's his right foot has an injury, but. It's really amazing the safety they have now, because if this was, I don't even know if it was 5 years ago or 10, this might have resulted in death.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, absolutely avoided a fatality. I mean, the fact that Grosjean's walking away with, burnt hands and really nothing more than bumps and bruises is nothing short of miraculous. I'm always really careful that I don't like to promote the negative side of racing. There's a percentage of people who like watching for the crashes and they like to see the disaster part of it. I despise that, but from these kinds of incidents, we can take a lot of real positives. I mean, not everything was perfect about the way that accident happened. It definitely highlights a couple of issues that still need to be addressed, but certainly, people haven't seen it. It is certainly one of the most spectacular crashes that's happened in any kind of racing in a good number of years. The short version of a long story is, really Grosjean made a mistake. He thought he had a clear lane to the right of him, made a fairly aggressive move. The car on the inside of him, Danny Kvyat, had nowhere to go. Grosjean kind of hit, which put his car out of control. They estimate at the time of impact, he was doing 137 miles an hour. I guess that's roughly about 200 miles or 200 kilometers an hour. And then went into the Armco barrier, penetrated the barrier, which the Armcos are like, a lot of the barriers that we see around the city where you have the piece of, bent, sheet metal that sit on the post, like along the river valley, not really designed anymore for racetracks. I mean, I look at those as a very, very archaic, form of trying to keep the cars in the racetrack. His car split in half, the back part completely severed off. Burst into flames. Fortunately, he was in such a position he was actually able to extricate himself. The F1 safety team was right on hand. Without the halo, it's really tough to think about, but it would certainly have been, it would have been very serious and likely a fatality.
So when I watched that video, the thing that strikes me is it looks like another racer or driver is actually there to help pull him out. Is it that easy for a driver to get out of his car to go help somebody else?
Well, that wasn't a driver. What happens in Formula One is behind the grid is the safety car, which also doubles as the pace vehicle. On the start, when the field takes off, the safety car stays with the pack for the first lap. So they'll actually drive out there at breakneck speed. Like they're really just in a high performance street car. So the fact that this happened at turn three was really a saving grace, because the safety car wasn't too far behind the pack. Those were the actual medical personnel from F1, as well as the volunteer staff in Bahrain that were on scene within seconds. It used to be in the olden days, drivers would do that kind of stuff. I mean, I remember even in it's considered olden days, but in NASCAR about 20 years ago, a driver named Steve Park got into a terrible accident at Pocono. They fixed that part of the track, but his teammate was Dale Earnhardt Jr., who actually jumped out of his car to make sure that Steve Park was okay. In Formula One, it used to happen, but now it's just so hard for the drivers to get out and back in. There's going to be at Gregor's suggestion, we're actually going to start doing a racing 101 type. Video and instructional series once the race the season ends. Talking about how hard it is to get into a car. I mean, a driver really can't do it by themselves anymore. So if you get out, you're out of the car and your day would be done.
Colin Livingston joins in the Cantorque Racing Report. And, you know, obviously that was a huge story. Lewis Hamilton has tested positive for COVID, so he is going to miss this weekend's race, Colin. And so from an outsider's perspective, you know, I'm far from an expert, I would think, man, like, is this the opportunity of a lifetime for a young driver to get his spot on a team that's pretty dominant and show what you can do?
It is and it isn't. I mean, the guy that's been tapped to replace Hamilton is George Russell. He currently races for the Williams team, who's a Mercedes supplied team. Their drivetrain comes from Mercedes, and it's no big secret that Russell is the heir apparent to join Mercedes when either Bottas or Hamilton moves on. You know, opportunity of a lifetime. It's going to be interesting, but it's really only a one race thing. So I don't think Russell has a lot to lose. I mean, expectations are going to be high, but he's going to end, like, unless something drastic changes, he'll end up in that car in a few years regardless. There's a number of other call-ups, though, this weekend. Jack Aitken, he gets to make his Formula One debut. He's the guy that's going to step in for George Russell. There's going to be a call-up. Pietro Fittipaldi is going to be filling in for Grosjean. So there's a number of people who are getting their first starts, which I think, you know, for those guys, the last two, it's going to be more significant because if they perform, it might catch somebody's attention. If they don't, it'll likely be, you know, a one-race Formula One career, and they'll be, you know, sent back to their other series.
Talking all things with the race, Cantorque Race Report with Colin Livingston. Colin, more F2 drivers are jumping into F1. Is this a special year, or is there just more openings?
It's a bit of both. I mean, you know, Haas is really getting a lot of attention this week because finally, you know, we've spoken about it over the past weeks. Their two drivers, Magnussen and Grosjean, it was announced, you know, about a month ago that they were not going to be retained by the team. They finally announced this week that, you know, Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin are going to be their drivers moving up from F2. Kind of an interesting side note with Mazepin, you know, his father is, you know, a Russian billionaire, so he'll be coming with some money. But to get into Formula One, you cannot buy your way in there. I mean, you've got to go through the FIA's qualification process, which, again, the steps to get a super license in Formula One is just mind-numbingly complicated. But there's a chance that at the end of this weekend, which is F2's last race, if Mazepin has a bad weekend, he might not have enough points to get his super license, and I'm not sure what the steps will be in that situation. Schumacher will be in the car for sure, but yeah, I mean, it's always great to get new blood. I think part of the move is that they're trying to get these guys in. They're trying to get them. You know, the Haas program really needs money. They went through a bunch of bad sponsorship deals going back to last year, and I know it's left them fairly cash strapped. So getting a bit of an injection of cash and reducing their the amount that they're spending on their drivers is definitely going to help things. But yeah, I mean, kind of a mixed blend of news for those guys over at Haas.
And lastly, Colin, quickly, the dog on the track during the FP2 race, like, what's going on there? How's that happen?
It's, you know, no matter how secure you make these venues, these little critters can sneak in. A couple weeks ago, it was the same thing. And then, yeah, during the free practice two on Friday, there was a dog on track. You know, they had to, you know, call the drivers off. They had to throw a red flag for that. The Sky Sports camera guys were just awesome. They tracked the dog, followed him through his little labyrinth of holes in the fence. Saw him kind of scurry out of the venue, and then there was even a follow-up story by the local SPCA that they managed to get the fella, gave him some treatment, and it sounds like a happy ending. It definitely wouldn't have been that way if they hadn't cleared him off the track.
Definitely not. And quickly, lastly, I lied. Lance Stroll, after you know, a pretty strong weekend, ended up upside down after receiving contact during the race. Obviously not what he wanted.
Definitely not ideal, but I'll tell you what, listening to Lance's radio and the commentary that's come out, man, this guy is one of the coolest dudes in the world. He got, you know, he kind of got torpedoed by, you know, Danny Cavillat, the same guy who was involved in the other incident with Grosjean. And his nickname has been the Torpedo for a long time. You know, basically a 50-50 incident, but it's so funny that we have all these major things and they're at the back. But yeah, Lance ended up upside down. The team knew that something was wrong on the radio, called to him and said, "Hey, Lance, are you okay?" He's like, yeah, I'm upside down, you know, which is really reminiscent to Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. So it took a little bit. He popped his belt. He kind of landed on his head and had to get pulled out from under the car, but, he's okay. I think the car's okay as well.
Oh, I'm sure those guys love quoting that show. It's a classic. Colin, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. We'll see how it goes with no Hamilton this weekend as we move into wrap up the season, get into Racing 101. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
You betcha. Thanks a lot.